I know I'm gonna get got. But I'm gonna get mine more than I get got, though.
What is going on, guys? This is another episode of Lock It or Leave It. Special episode, we have a new special guest, the brother of one of our former guests. But before we get to him, let's go and talk about everybody else that's here. First off, I'm your host, Jay, and joining me as usual is my co-host, Cam. What's going on, man?
What's up, guys? Episode 30, the big 3-0. Excited to get into this one, and I think you guys are going to like it, so let's get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have Aaron, that will be our regular guest before we introduce our last one. Aaron, how are you, man?
Doing great. Middle of the week, work's kind of getting slow. Always fun to hop on and record a podcast, kind of break up the monotony. So very excited to have our guest on, Roberto. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So he spoiled the name. This guy is one of the greatest kickers in FSU Florida State history. When I was doing my research on Roberto, I was just like astounded. Just like, whoa, he's won this, he's won this, he's done this, he's done this. It's crazy. And I told him before the podcast, it's great to have him on because we had Nick Maddox on who won in 99. Shout out to Nick for coming on. And now we have a 2013 winner of the Natty. So it's great to have him on. Roberto, thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to do this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to go and take a deep dive into everything Roberto has done at FSU and his career after that, too. All right, we'll be right back. All right, so we're back, and Roberto, you were a redshirt freshman, and you had one of the best seasons for a redshirt freshman. Just reading these off is going to take some time, so just let me take this. As a redshirt freshman, you were one of the most prolific seasons for a kicker in Florida State, ACC, and college football history. You were the third Seminole to win the Lou Groza Award, and for anyone that doesn't know, that means you were awarded the nation's top kicker for that year. You broke the national record for points by a kicker in a season with 157. And this is the craziest stat. You outscored 8 of FSU opponents by yourself. Oh, man, it's crazy. You made 115 out of 116 kicks. That's a 99% conversion rate. And you didn't miss a point after attempt, 94 of 94. And you finish all that off with an All-American first team and a championship. So that was the closest a kicker could get to a perfect season in your freshman year. What aspects of your game are you trying to improve heading into the next season?
That season was crazy looking back at it. And I remember all the reports and all the interviews going into next season. You know, how are you going to get better after, I mean, you just read them, all those accolades. I missed one kick. I would remember saying, I'm like, hey, like, you know, there is, I mean, I guess statistically and on paper to get better, I have to make one more kick. You know what I mean? Like not miss any, you know what I mean? But I told myself, you know, it's a season like that. It's tough to answer back. And I'm just going to just stick to the same process, do what I do, and just take it kick by kick. And that's how I kind of have done my whole career. But it's definitely that season was one where, you know, I just played, you know, it wasn't like there was an expectation or there wasn't like, oh, I want to be, you know, 85% this year, or I want to be 80% this year. It was really just enjoying, having fun. And I got caught up in just being with the guys, being with the team. We had a great team. We had a great special teams unit. I always shout them out because without them, I wouldn't have been that accurate. I mean, 94 for 94 extra points. I mean, to me, when I was doing it, when we were doing it, the operation was sound and they made it easier on me, which, I mean, you see it now these days, you know, there's guys missing extra points, you know, it's tough. It's not that easy of a kick. You lose a little bit of focus or you know, your holder goes out there and it's like, oh, well, it's an extra point. Boom. You know, he drops the snap or something happens. He holds it wrong. Boom. There you go. There's a miss. Yeah, I mean, going back to the question, it's hard. There's nothing really you can do. Just try to do the same or, you know, make one more kick.
So that same season, your teammate, James Winston, won the Heisman Trophy, leading the Noles to an undefeated 14-0 record. What was it like to have him around the team during those years, and how did his big charisma and personality rub off on the rest of the team?
Oh man. So like I say, I speak for myself. I don't know how other guys will take it from the team, but like during that year, I mean, I was what, 19? I mean, we're all 18 to 21 year olds, and we didn't, like, there wasn't an expectation of like us going to the national championship. Like, you know, there wasn't, we had come off a Orange Bowl victory and I was redshirted. Jameis was redshirted. And that class that I came with, you know, some of the guys started, some of the guys, a lot of the guys redshirted. But after that season, you know, we kind of, you know, there was something brewing, but we took it day by day, week by week, you know, heading into the off season, heading into summer workouts. But it was just a unit that we had. It was a bond that we had that in the moment you didn't realize it. In the moment we were just playing, we were just hanging out, you know, going out together, going to dinners together, you know, building a bond without us even knowing it, you know. And to Coach Fisher, I give it to him. He had a lot of team building activities where you like didn't think it was team building, but you know, looking back at it now that, you know, I've been on different teams, there, you know, different organizations now in the NFL, you look back and that 2013 team had something special, and it's a bond that I haven't seen again after that year. I mean, not taken away from 14 or 15, but it's just, you know, I remember Coach Fisher would say, remember this, like this team will only be in this, you know, team meeting room on this field for this year. Like after this year, guys are going to leave. New guys are going to come in. It's not going to be the same team anymore. And, you know, and you're sitting there, you're like 19 years old. You're like, oh, like, okay, like, cool. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. But it isn't until like after where you're like, okay, like we won the national championship and I won the Groza, I missed one kick. Okay, we can do it all over again. Like, why can't we do it all over again? You know, Jameis is coming back. We have, like, most of the starting players coming back. But you saw in 14 how hard it was. I mean, we were struggling. I mean, the games were a lot closer. There were some games we were down, like, 21 where we were like, oh, man, like, you know, why isn't it as easy as it was last year? It's not. It's hard to win a national championship. It's hard to go undefeated. So that's why when you watch these teams and these Bamas, you know, give it to Clemson, they've been in the college football final these last couple of years. It's hard. It's hard to make it all the way to the end. And it just use me being on a national championship team. You know what it takes. So you know what those guys are going through, those guys that make it to the championship. It's tough. It's hard to repeat, but you'll always have that memory and that bond that no one other than those guys on the team will know, you know, what you guys went through and how close of a unit you guys were.
Yeah, before I pass it to Aaron, I just want to say it kind of reminds me of the Bucs, how you have these Tristan Wirfs, he's a first-year offensive lineman. You have these young players, Devin White, and they're tasting that Super Bowl so early. And Tom Brady and Mike Evans and the actual vets are saying, this year coming up, you have to keep that same mentality that it was the first year because it doesn't come this easy. Mike Evans doesn't sniff a Super Bowl every year. You know, you have to appreciate, you have to really take into the fact and be grateful for the time that you have, Aaron.
Yeah, so in that 2013 National Championship game, it's a great game, goes down to the wire, late in the fourth quarter, in the Rose Bowl, Trey Mason rumbles down the sideline, trucks a bunch of our guys, scores a touchdown to put us down 4 points with a minute left. Everyone in the building on the edge of their seat. It's about to be a historic moment. Jameis drives us all the way down the field, touchdown to KB. What were you seeing on the sideline? What was it like to witness that energy and that crazy drive to cap off the last BCS game ever?
I just got goosebumps you explaining that. Man, honestly, I wish we were down by two and I could have went in there and hit a game winner. But no, it was I knew we were down by four, so we didn't need a field goal. We needed a touchdown. And I mean, obviously, you guys have seen that game. You know, during that last drive when Mason scored, we had, you know, a minute or two left. But we had, inside me, I knew we were prepared. Coach Fisher always prepares the 2 minute, the 4 minute, you know, need a field goal, need a touchdown. We work it every week. And he was very, what's the correct word? Not anal, but very adamant on everyone being in the right, you know, he would stop plays, making sure like, hey, you got to get out of bounds on this play, or, you know, on first down, we got to clock it if it's under so-and-so seconds. So I knew going in, we had a shot because Coach Fisher knew how to run the 2 minute. Well, we knew how to run it. And, I don't know. I had confidence in Jameis. I had confidence in all of our guys. Like I said, we were a unit. We were a team. Everyone trusted each other. We were there for each other, and we knew, you know, we could do it. It was just a matter of trusting the process and executing. And we drove it down. And on that last play, we had practiced that play to KB, and I knew. And then I want to say someone told me that play was coming up for if we got into the red zone, close to score, and they got it. I mean, KB, what, he's 6'6", you know, 240. I mean, just throw it up there. He's going to get it. He's going to get it over, you know, the majority of DBs out in college. So, I mean, it was kind of like watching a movie, man. We had a front row seat. I mean, obviously I'm like, we need a touchdown. If we score, we got to go kick the extra point. So, you know, I was just staying ready, but we had the front row seat, you know, it was going, but you know, I didn't want to get too excited where it's like, hey man, yeah, we're driving down, but we got to score. We get stopped at the one. It doesn't matter. You know, we lose. Until we scored, that's when I was like, let's go. Like, it was kind of like surreal. I didn't celebrate that much because I was like, I got to go kick this extra point. Like, I got to keep the streak going. You know what I mean? I don't want to miss this last kick and break the streak. So I went out there, kicked the extra point, and then we kicked the kickoff, and that's it. It was just like, it all happened so quick, but it's good to rewatch it and see the, you know, relive the memories, you know, our 10 years about to come up in 2 years. So that's crazy.
Yeah. I encourage anybody who is like a younger Noel to go back and watch the highlights of that game. That last 8 minutes of the game, so much happened. The last 8 minutes could have been a game by itself with the kickoff return. They come back, they score, we score again. The Rashad Green 60 with a minute 30 just gets it, automatically puts us in the field goal range. Absolutely crazy game. But let's talk about the season after that, because somehow you improved on your freshman season, solidifying you as one of the greatest kickers in Florida State history. You made the second most field goals out of anybody in the country that season. And we had a great list of returning players. We were still stacked. We had Jameis Winston, who won the Heisman in 2013. Rashad Green returned. Ronald Darby, Jalen Ramsey, DeMarcus Walker. Then we had recruiting freshmen coming in. Dalvin Cook, Alec Eberle, Derek Nnadi, Ryan Izzo. Which team in the ACC in your tenure at Florida State was the best or loudest crowd atmosphere? Because we would always seem to be the rivals, whichever stadium we always went into.
In the ACC, the loudest and toughest rival was definitely Clemson. They've always had a good team. And honestly, I remember going into Death Valley that 2013 year. When we won the national championship, that was a loud. I was sitting pregame and I was sitting next to my punter, Casey Beatty. I was literally talking to him like next to each other, and like he couldn't hear me. He was like, what? Like he was screaming, like, what? And I'm like, are we really yelling right now? We're sitting next to each other, but that stadium was going crazy. And it wasn't where I think like LaMarcus Joyner sacked them and we returned it, and that stadium got quiet. But that's been one of the loudest. SEC is Florida. Florida would be the second loudest that I played in. But I mean, everywhere we would go during those 2 years, I mean, even the third year, you know, people wanted to go to the games because they wanted to see a top five team. They wanted to be that team that beat us. I remember we were going on that streak of being unbeaten. We went what, 28-29-0, or something like that. But every team wanted to be the team that beat us. And I remember Coach Fisher would always be like, no matter if we were playing like Wake Forest or you know, a smaller ACC school, you know, don't, you know, not focus, not going to this week focused, you know, lackadaisical, you know, oh, we're going to beat this team because every team's going to come give us their A game. And they did. And that's why that's that second year, with that 14 year, we were kind of like, oh, you know, we can win with our B game, maybe C game, you know. And that's why we would go into games being a little, starting off a little slow, and then we would turn it on towards the end. And, you know, we'd give all the FSU fans a kind of like a, everyone's holding their breath, like, oh my gosh, is this going to be the game where we lose? But we would always pull it out and come in and win it. I remember that Louisville game. We were down 21. I was like, and I had missed a kick that game too. And it was just like, it was a Thursday night game. And I'm like, everyone, it just wasn't going our way. And then all of a sudden, like, we came back after half. We were like, all right, we got to tighten up. We got to win. Like, we can't lose. That stadium was loud. That got loud. We ended up pulling the victory. We won. And I remember going into that 14, going into that Rose Bowl game. I think that's where kind of our luck ended. We just kind of came in flat. We came in, you know, that's a game you don't like to relive. Nothing went our way. And yeah, that's where the streak ended. But like everything, you know, it's a streak starts, a streak ends. But I mean, we had a great team that year as well.
Yeah, so you kind of just touched on that streak and stuff. It was 29 consecutive games, which is absolutely incredible. So leading up to that matchup, was that sort of a reality check for the team after being on top for so long? Or like, how did you guys react to that?
Yeah, you know, I remember, you know, like Madison Social was like putting out shirts of like the streak, and, you know, it became a thing. You know, reporters would say like, oh, you're 27-0 now, like most current active streak and most, I don't know, like it was the highest current active streak at the moment. I don't know if it still stands or someone's beat that, but you know, we had mounting pressure of you know, keeping it rolling, and oh, you guys better not lose, you know. We walk, you know, see fans, oh, you don't lose this one, you know, the streak, whatever. And you know, just go, it's at the end of the day, it's a game. It's a game, and they went in there. Oregon was the better team that day. I wouldn't say, you know, they were the better team overall. We just weren't the better team that day. We didn't execute. We didn't get the bounces that we needed. And we lost. And honestly, sometimes you need a loss like that to give you a reality check to say like, okay, I can be beaten. We can be beaten. I mean, we hadn't lost since what, the NC State game in 2012? Am I right? Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, the weeknight game, yeah.
Yeah.
That was our last game we had lost. Like, and some of the guys had been on the team that hadn't lost yet. So, you know, what is defeat? What is loss? We don't know. We always end up winning, and everything's all dandy. Everyone loves us. Everything's great. You know, we go out after the games. Everything's cool, whatever. And then when you lose, it's kind of like, oh, you guys lost. You know, the bus ride home stinks. The flight home stinks. You lost. You know, everyone's like, oh, man, you lost. Dang, you didn't do good. You dropped this pass. You threw this pick, you know. No one, you know, when you're winning, everything's cool, right? You know, oh, you guys are the best, whatever, blah, blah, blah. When you lose, it's like, oh, okay, cool. So then sometimes you need that reality check, that little like, damn, we lost. And then we had to wait a whole offseason until we could come back and get another victory. But it makes you appreciate, you know, for fans too, it makes you appreciate, hey man, you know, you go out there, one guy's going to win, one team's going to win, one team's going to lose. And it makes you appreciate what it takes to have a win, what it takes to win. And, you know, some days, you know, you're going to lose. And as long as you perform well and execute it right, you'd rather get beat, like actually beat. Like that team was just more athletically better than us. They were just better, not shoot yourselves in the foot and, you know, have all these penalties, you know, throw bad interceptions or, you know, bump, you know what I mean? That's when you're like, okay, we beat ourselves. We didn't actually, they didn't beat us. We beat ourselves, but it's great. You know, it's, that's what it is. A game. One's going to win. One's going to lose. At the end of the day, it's a game, you know?
Yeah. I think that a lot of people aren't in the situation of being the hunted. A lot of times they're the hunters where they don't have the expectation. It's a small risk, a big reward for them. Or if they don't win, no one's going to really say anything. But if they do win, oh my goodness, they pulled the biggest upset of their life, you know? So they aren't used to being the overwhelming favorite, to have the pressure that every single win. And the thing about college also is if you lose to Louisville in week four, you may not make the college football playoff. That's your season right there. So you have to go in, you know, and you can lose any time. So you got to keep that mindset of always staying locked in.
Exactly. And that's why upsets happen, because the guy, the team that isn't expected to win, they got nothing to lose. We go in there and we get housed 50-0. Oh, well, you know, no one expected us to win. We go in there and somehow win. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, you know, the upset. That's why being a top team like that, a Bama, a Clemson, a Florida State during that time, it was like, we got to be on our A game every time, because every team is going to bring in their A game. Every team is going to, you know, save their say injured quarterback and not play him the game before if he's on injury, so he can be fresh during the week they play us, or, you know, whatever they got to do, they're going to, you know, bring in more, like sell cheaper tickets to bring in more fans. You know what I mean? Like they come in ready to play and we got to be on our A game every time. And, you know, the more and more and more and more it mounts, it's like, well, dang, like we can't have an off week. Now we're going to get beat. So that's why, you know, college football is fun. You know, anyone can get beat. You know, that's why you see the college football game day, like who's on upset alert. And there's always one every week where some good ranked team gets beat by some nobody. And you're like, dang, that's crazy. Like it that's why it's fun. The game, it makes the game fun.
Yeah, so you definitely stayed on your A game your junior season. You became FSU's second 3-time All-American school history. Only other person to do that, the man, the myth, the legend, primetime Deion Sanders. How's it feel to know that your hard work could pay off like that and let you share the same company as an NFL Hall of Famer and legend like Deion?
It's great. It's awesome. And like I said, when you're in it, you know, you're not really focused on, at least I was, and I wasn't focused on accolades, award. I didn't know that you could win that many awards. You know, I was like Walter Camp, 3-time All-American, 2-time All-American. I was this something All-American, USA All-American. And I have all these plaques and trophies and awards. I was something at Columbus up in Ohio. I won that 2 years in a row. So I have a ton of accolades, ton of awards, Agroza, you know, my name's in the room, in the locker room of all Americans. And you don't realize that until after you leave and see who you're in company with, you know, with Deion Sanders, only 2-time three-time consensus All-American, and, you know, all these in history, Peter Warg, you know, all these good guys that were All-Americans too, you know, I'm in there with them. So it's cool to see. And one day, you know, I'll be able to tell my kids, I'll be able to take them up for a game and show them, you know, hey, that's dad right there. You know, he's in the Champions Club, you know, I'm up there, and, you know, being able to take them through the coach's office up there, and they see the Groza trophy up there. And so that'll be cool one day. You don't realize it when you're 18, 21, 19, 20, 21, but now looking back, and seeing how hard it is to be good. And, you know, FSU hasn't really been, you know, contending for, you know, a AC championship or a national championship these last couple of years. So, you know, like, hey man, it's tough. It's hard to win. And for me being there the time that I was there and being able to win a national championship, it's very, it's just, you look back and you're grateful and you're like, man, I was there. I was part of a team that was excellent. I contributed a lot to the success of the team. And you always have those friends, those memories, all those guys will be, you know, friends for life. And we'll always have that connection. We went to FSU, we were national champions. But yeah, it's, and you know, sometimes you sit back and think, and Man, I accomplished a lot in those 3 years at FSU.
So building onto those accolades you're talking about, you finished your FSU career with 405 points, never missed a PAT, one of only 12 NCAA kickers to ever do that. You had the highest conversion rate of any NCAA kicker ever, 97% of kicks. Only two Seminoles have scored 400 points, you and Dustin Hopkins. That's adding on to the great kicker legacy that there's been at FSU with Sebastian Janikowski, Graham Gano, Dustin Hopkins, and now you. Do you have a relationship with any of those guys that are in the league? And do you converse with them, talk about kicking FSU? Have they helped you get different places? What's the relationship like there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially Dustin had a big impact on me my redshirt year. Just learning off of him, just watching him, you know, how he carried himself. That redshirt year was big, and I still talk to him here and there. You know, he has a family. He, you know, he's doing his own thing, you know, now. And Dustin's always been great. I actually moved into his house after he left 2012. I moved into his house 2013. And I lived there for a year, year and a half. So that was cool. Graham, I do talk to Graham a lot. And I've loved Graham's swing. I've loved Graham's approach to the game. And it was cool because we were together in 17 at in Charlotte. So I learned a lot from him and, you know, got pointers from him, and he's been in the league for a long time now. So I talk to him a couple times a year, just to catch up and see how he's doing and see how his family is. Great family. Sebastian, he's more on the low key side. I remember when we played him in 16, when I was with the Bucks. The one guy I traded jerseys with was him. I was like, you know, all the other kickers, okay, you know. But Sebastian, we have Florida State in common, and we're both Groza winners. So I was like, I went up to him before the game. I was like, hey, Z-Bass. Like, hey, man, nice to meet you. You know, he's all like, you know, what was up, man? You know, I was kind of nervous to ask him. I was like, hey, man, so you want to trade jerseys after the game? I mean, I was gonna be like, if he said no, I'd be like, all right, man, that's cool, you know, I had to ask. But he was like, yeah, man, let's do it, we'll do it after the game, you know, come find me. And I was like, yes. So I still have it, it's here, you know. One day I'm gonna have it framed. And I mean, he's the GOAT. I mean, first round kicker, shoot, kicked what, 18 years, 19 years, legend. And he went to FSU. So what, those are the three. Yeah, him, yeah, Dustin, Graham, and him. So good guys, all good guys.
Yeah, man. So talking a little bit more about your NFL career, you were drafted 59th by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you were the first kicker taken in the second round since Mike, I don't know if I'm spelling it right or pronouncing it right, Nugent back in 05. And in week 11 of your rookie season, you went 4-for-4 on field goals. You were named the NFC Special Teams Player of the Week. For the whole year, you didn't have the season that you maybe envisioned. So could you just tell our listeners how much detail and technique goes into kicking itself and how much environment plays a part in how well you can perform on the field?
Definitely. I mean, shoot, getting drafted that high. I mean, you saw the accolades. You just read them off. You know, I was deserving of it. I remember my agent saying it was either between the second or the fourth round projected. And, like, you know, there's all this talk of, like, oh, you know, could he go first, blah, blah, blah. So I wasn't really, like, you know, I remember leading up to the draft, I was just like, hey, like, I want to be chill. Like, on the first round, I think I golfed. I wasn't really worried about it. Second round, when the second day came around, I was like, all right, you know, whatever. If I get called, I get called. And I ended up getting a call and getting drafted. And it was all so surreal. It was like, dang, I got drafted. Like, that's like in the second round. Like, that's crazy. Like, that's awesome. That's crazy. Like, mix of emotions. But yeah, man, it once you, like, going into the league, getting drafted that high, it's a blessing and it's also a curse, because, you know, you get drafted that high, you know, the fan base is like, oh, you could have drafted a wide receiver, you could have drafted somebody else, which they could have. So you know, but I was well deserving. You know, I was all these accolades coming out of college. But you have the expectation basically of being a robot. You can't miss, you know what I mean? And when you miss, they look at you crazy. They're like, what's going on? You know? And you know, I was going through a swing change coming out of that last year to help, you know, just to be able to kick longer. Cause you know, you see all these guys with groin injuries and tearing their groins and stuff. And I feel like I was going down that path with my swing. It was very aggressive. You know, so I was a guy that I was always like technical, and I could feel like I could maneuver things. And, you know, I played a lot of golf too. So it's like, you know, I worked this swing, and I'll be able to have a much more efficient swing. I was looking for an efficient swing where it was a lot more powerful, but I was straining less on my body. You know, my back wasn't hurting. My groin wasn't hurting. You know, these are all the things that the fans don't see. They don't see what you do week in and week out, you know, the injuries you suffer, and you know, the treatment you got to get. And I was like, you know, I'm not going to last long in the NFL if I don't fix this. So it wasn't enough time that off season that I had from what, February till going into OTAs with the Bucks, and then, you know, going into the season where I was fully confident with it, because you have this swing that you've done basically pretty much your whole life, and now you're converting it and switching it. And, you know, I'm athletic, you know, it's just like playing soccer, right? But it's hard for that muscle memory to be engraved. And then plus when you have this, you know, pressure where you miss one, then it's like, well, shoot, like, do I just go back to the old one and like kind of work it out? Or like, do I stick with the new, you know what I mean? So going through all that was tough, that beginning of that year. And then it wasn't until after the Carolina game where I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to do a little hybrid swing, a mix between my old swing and my new swing, and kind of just stick that on and go, you know, finish the season. And halfway after that season, after that Carolina game, I feel like I finished strong. That Kansas City game was my best game, 4-for-4. You know, I struck the ball well, but it's tough. It's tough in the NFL, and it's definitely doable, but it's just all about having the confidence in your mechanics. And once you have that down, you know, you can hit, make anything, right? So finishing that season, I was still kind of focusing on, you know, my swing and trying to get it better. Things didn't work out that next year. And then that's when I got picked up so once I got cut from the Bucks and the Bears, I was like, you know what? I'm going to fix this. So when I go back in it, I'm going to be good to go. And I worked on it, fixed it, did a workout with Carolina. And I remember it was me, Andrew Franks, and Youngway Koo. And I beat all of them out. I went 10 for 10. Youngway, both of them, I think, missed two. And they signed me. And they were like, hey, Graham's hurt. His knee's kind of hurting him. We just want to make sure we have insurance if he's not ready to go. So they brought me on. And that was kind of like a redshirt year for me, where I sat behind Graham and I was like, Graham's like my guy. Like I love his swing. I love the way he hits the ball. So I picked his brain. You know, I was there watching him kick. He was, you know, helping me out. And I feel like I kind of solidified that new swing that I wanted while the time I was there. I was there from November till the end of December. No, October to December. And that was a good moment there. And then after that, I was with the Chargers. You know, the Chargers with the new swing felt good. Went 7-for-7 in preseason. I think it was like 4 extra points and 3 field goals. Ended with a game winner. So I felt good. I thought, you know, I feel like I won the job. They ended up keeping Caleb. You know, this is a long story where like, well, you know, and then they end up cutting Caleb like 5 weeks into the season. And then I didn't get another opportunity. And then the longer you're out, you're like, okay, well, the longer I'm out, the harder it is to get back in. You got new guys coming in. And then I get the call this last year and I'm like, really? Like, why now? Whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that's the life of an athlete, right? But Yeah, man, it's crazy. And but I feel great in my swing right now and what I got going and all this experience and everything that's happened to me from the ups at FSU. Kind of like I said, with the games where you're winning so much, you don't know what losing feels like. You don't know what it tastes like. You don't know what it, how to go through it until you go through that loss. You suffer the downs, you know, at the Bucks that first year, you suffer where it is like, you don't feel like Superman anymore. You're like, whoa, like, you know, I'm missing instead of making, like I'm struggling where it used to be, you know, boom, 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 boom. So you need those times where you reevaluate, you go through the fire, and it just ends up making you better. And I feel like I'm in a great position, you know, now. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, so I saw the Hard Knocks too, where they brought you in and they had to release you. And I always say that you weren't the problem there. Before they had kicking problems, after they had kicking problems, to me, I attribute that and I call it the Dirk Cotter curse, because wherever Dirk Cotter went, good things did not follow. Let's just put it that way. Kev, if you want to keep on going with your question.
Yeah, I just want to know, can you, I know you you talked about like your swing. Can you explain to us and like the rest of our listeners, like how you went on like changing your swing process and like how do you adjust that in the middle of like the season?
Well, so it was like a very kind of hard. Okay, so like I was very wedgy, very, very kind of like scooping. So like when you're wedgy, you use more of your groin. And I wanted to use more of my quad, which is a bigger muscle, can take more strain, has more power. So that you rotate your foot a little, you basically pick your heel up a little bit more. You got to force yourself to stay taller, but once you master it, you swing easier, but the ball still goes as far or if not further. But like to me, I see these things and I know I can do that. Like you show me something, I can do that, right? So I was looking, you know, I'd be watching Graham. I like Graham. I wanted to kind of form my swing like Graham. Robbie Gould has a good swing. Couple other guys out there, but Robbie Gould, Graham Gano, and then there's a lot of other guys that are wedgy. And over time, I mean, it's harder on your body. And you can make kicks. I did it at Florida State, but I'm like, man, like, you know, I'm after, you know, the games, after practice, I'm like worn out. And I'm like, this has to be easier. It has to be in a more efficient way, right? But it was just more of a natural, like, soccer ball, like, kind of like, it was kind of a raw swing, right? I hadn't really, you know, like in golf, you hadn't really gotten lessons. It was just something that I did over time, right? And I knew I could change it. I felt that I was good enough that I could adapt. And it worked, but there just wasn't that many reps. Like I needed a full year, I feel like, to hone in and trust the new swing. That's why you see these golfers where they go out and they go to new coaches or, you know, they're fixing something on their swing. The first couple tournaments they play, they like suck. They like miss the cut or they place. Because their body, like mechanically, they got to go through a tournament to see how it works in tournament play, right? You can go on the range and hit it all day, right? But it's under the pressure situation where your body wants to resort back to what it knows, right? What it used to do. So you got to break that habit. And the only way of doing that is in games. And, you know, obviously you didn't want to say this out loud or you didn't want to tell your coach or you didn't want to tell anyone because they're going to be like, what? No one would have understood, right? And like, that's the stuff like I went through where like, okay, well, I can't tell people when I go out to dinner or when they see me like, hey, man, what's going on? It's like, all right, you want to sit down? You want me to explain it to you? We'll sit here for, you know, 30 minutes and I'll explain it to you. But like, you're not going to understand because you're not a kicker. You're not an athlete. You're not, you know, seen on every week, you know, your performance, right? So it was just like, all right, whatever, you know. But so it's tough. It was, you know, tough to go through. I'd never gone through it. It's just like you want to explain it to people and like you kind of want to make analogies, but you really can't. The only way is like golfing where a guy's going through a swing change, right? But yeah, I managed to, I looked at my old swing, I looked at my new swing. What can I stick to? What can I focus on that I can manage it and get by through the rest of the season? And in the off season, I try to work on it a little bit more. And, you know, because during the season, you can't work on stuff. You can't, like, you're in season, right? You're just there. It's like plugging a switch into the wall to charge. Like, you're just, you have to be on repetition. You can't be working on stuff. That's what the off season's for. That's what, where you can work on stuff. So I was able to put together a swing that I was like, all right, just do this, do this, do this, and just get by. And I was able to do that well. It wasn't until the last game where our like the last game going in, I was like, I could finish 80% if I make all my kicks. If not, I'll finish like low 70s. Or no, like high 70s, which is not that bad of a year. And then I ended up going 1-for-3 in the last game. It's because my snapper tore his ACL on one of the punts going down. So our backup snapper goes in. And our backup snapper, like, barely got any practice. Like, the last time he got snaps was, like, 5 weeks before. So he's on the sideline, like, snapping to my holder. And my holder's just like, you're going to have to give me time. And just – and I'm watching him snap, and I'm like
– you're not that guy, pal.
I mean, he knows. He's like, I'm the backup snapper. Like, I can do it. But, like, he's like, I've never done it in a game. And it's like, you don't realize it until you're like, oh, shit, I got to do this in the game. Like, he was a linebacker. And they brought him. They're like, hey, man, snap. And he's just like, fuck. And he's snapping it back there. Like, and he told me, he's like, hey, man, like, I'm not the guy. I'm going to try to get there back there as best as possible. And I'm like, dude, just, and I'm trying to take the pressure off of him. I'm trying to build his confidence. Right. So you're like, no, man, you're doing good. Like, you're doing fine. You're going to be good, to kind of lower his anxiety. Right. We go out there. We go out for like a 40-yard field goal. I hit it. I feel good. I just hear boom, boom. It gets blocked. I'm like, oh, gosh. So when he snapped it, we looked at film after the sideline. He's like, I snapped it, but I didn't look up. I didn't go up and block. So he snapped, and he's looking at his snap to see if it was good, but he didn't go up to block. And the guys went up through the middle. And the other guys know, like, there's a backup snapper. So we're gonna expose this gap. Ended up blocking that one. And then I had another one where it was like, all right, well, I don't know what to expect now. I got my last one blocked. And it ended up going off. But I just, you know, you have to slow down for the operation. I ended up, I think I missed it right. And there I go 1-for-3. And I'm like, well, there you go. Cause I was going good. I had done good the last couple of weeks, and I'm like, all right, you know, this last game finish whatever 2-for-2, 3-for-3. I'll end up being, you know, a little bit over 80%, or maybe if anything, you know, mid to high 70s, which is not that bad. And I ended up going 1-for-3, which put me at like 72 or 73% for the year, which then it's the last game. And you're like, all right, well, this leaves a salty taste in everyone's mouth, you know, last game of the season. But, no, I thought I was doing good and progressing, but at the end of the day, you know, everything happens for a reason. You know, I like I said, if I didn't go through those tough times where, you know, all that happens and, you know, you start getting stuff from the media, stuff from, you know, everyone, you know, you feel like you're sitting at a dinner table and the grandma on the other side is looking at you like, dude, what's going on? And you're just like, bro, I get it. You know what I mean? It's just like, but at the end of the day, that's what it takes to be an athlete. That's what it is to play in the NFL. You know, people are going to, I mean, you see it every day. It happens every day. Like on ESPN, get up. Everyone's like, oh, he's not doing good in basketball. He's not making the shots. What's going on? Blah, 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 whatever, whatever. And I feel like that going through all that has helped me not only as an athlete on how to respond and how to adapt to that, but also in real life. Because everyone goes through stuff like that. It's just as an athlete, like you said on Hard Knocks, everyone can see it. I didn't know the cameras were on. I got fired on national TV, and I didn't even know that was – it wasn't until after where he was like, hey, man, like, by the way, the cameras were on there. And I was like, cool, bro, like, nice. But hey, it is what it is. You know, you sign up when you go, when they get there, they make you sign a paper, and they're like, that paper basically says anytime you're in this building, you can get film. So whatever. It sucks, but it just makes you that much better of a person, right? People are going to get fired from their jobs. Shit's going to happen, right? You got to be able to adapt and be like, hey, man, oh, okay, this sucks. Life sucks. Fucking shit didn't go my way. You know, what am I going to do? So what, now what mentality? And think about it. If I was hadn't gone through that and it was just success, 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 you kind of are like, well, like, what does not being successful taste like? You know, does that suck? Or how would I go through it? How would I respond in a shitty situation? So all that, you know, has helped me in life as well. When you go through, you know, turmoil, or you go through events, because life is just a lot harder, you know, the real life. You know, one day you're going to have kids and, you know, something's not going to go his way. You got to be able to tell him like, hey man, buddy, you know, I this happened to me and this is how I went through it. So it's all kind of a learning experience, which, you know, you can make it into something better. And now, like, I feel better where something like that would happen. I'm going to be more resilient. I'm going to be able to get through it a lot better, a lot quicker, and a lot more efficient, you know? So
given both the success and adversity you've had in your career, what advice would you give young kickers that are trying to make a name for themselves right now?
Young kickers. Trust the process, trust your routine. Don't focus on, you know, trying to go this perfect or this, you know, I want to make this many field goals. Focus on your process. Trust your process. Trust your routine. And after that, everything will take care of itself. Even, you know, kickers in college or NFL kickers, you sometimes get caught up in the result, caught up in I got to make this. I got to go so-and-so. I got to throw this many completions, where you get out of your process. And once you get out of your process, it's never going to work. So trust your process, trust what you built, trust your routine, have a great mindset, positive mindset, and you'll be successful.
So the last question we always ask everybody that went to Florida State, especially during that 29 game win streak, what were some of your favorite spots in Tallahassee as far as like the bars or restaurants and stuff? And like, where did you guys like to go like afterwards, after the games?
Man, now Tally has way more bars and cooler stuff than it was in
nightlife.
In 2013 we went out to the Strip, Coliseum. It's not even there anymore. RIP Coliseum. Collie. What else? Pots is still there. Pots. The what's the bar called underneath the Strip? Golly.
Ken's Tavern, maybe?
No, not Ken's, the bar that's underneath.
Ten.
Ten Red Rocks.
They've changed the name so many times, but yeah, the whole strip. Good times. Nightlife has gotten a lot better. I mean, you guys got Township now. Township, the palace was there when I was there, but it wasn't as popping as it is now. But yeah, man, good times. And my brother was there too, so you know, he was on the show before, but like there was 8 years of Aguayos, right? No, seven. Yeah, 7 years of Aguayos at Kicker, man. So, you know, we've left our stamp there. And you know, every time we go back to Tallahassee, they treat us with respect and loyalty, and everything's great. So love the Noles. Excited for what's up and coming with Coach Norville, and the new team we have. And excited to get up there for a game, maybe when they play.
Yeah, also shout out to Ricky. Me and him have put away some Y bombs at recess. So
yeah, man. It's
not for us.
Yeah, man. It's fun, man. It's college is fun. You look back at it. And Jim Coach Fisher was always right. You know, these are the 4 years you're not gonna get back. And when he was telling me this, I had a year of eligibility. I could have stayed another year. Imagine that. I could have stayed there. Ricky could have redshirted behind me. That would have been crazy. But you never can come back. You're only that 18 to 21, 22 for, you know what I mean? You can't be 27 and coming back to college, right? You're going to look weird. But you don't realize it when you're there. But yeah, man, college at FSU, it's memorable. All the time I meet players, you know, like that I've met in the NFL, you know, they've went to smaller schools, or, you know, people that went to smaller schools, they're like, man, like you went to FSU, like you went to a party school, a powerhouse. And you're like, I did, man. I did. And I lived it up. So that's always fun, man. Yeah, man. We bleed garnet and gold. It's everything. It's the team. It's the environment. It's tally. We love it. And that's why, you know, you always get hype when you see the tags like FSU alumni or mom, FSU mom, FSU, you know what I mean? Like one day, you know what I mean? One day, God willing, we all have kids. They go to FSU and you're just going to come back and be like, yeah, man, I went here. It's fun, man. It's a great school.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you again, Roberto. But let's do some sign-offs. We'll start with Aaron. Aaron, thanks for hopping on here on short notice, man.
Dude, Roberto, thank you so much for coming on. Hit us up whenever you're in Tally. Love to play some Pong, maybe take some shots, see what happens. But yeah.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys. This was fun. This podcast is fun. You know, I'm looking forward to see what other guests you guys have on. But definitely, if you guys want to have me again, you know, just to, you know, talk, I'm down.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again. And then Cam, anything you want to add on?
Yeah, thanks again for coming on. It was pretty easy to set up, and good luck in the rest of your trainings.
Definitely, definitely. Good luck to y'all too.
Yeah, so what's it called? Just the last thing I'm going to say, go on www.lockitorleaveit.org to find this episode. Go find our guests, see our partnerships, read our articles. Everything is on that website. We're going to keep doing our polls, keep putting in our entries for prize picks. But thank you guys for listening again. And Roberto, thank you for coming. We'll see y'all later. Peace.